This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in Humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu. Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a quick breakdown of some of the biggest headlines later in the episode. But first, we are in the thick of election season, and Illinoisans are picking a new Democratic nominee to replace longtime U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. In the final week until primary day, we're sitting down with the three frontrunners vying for his seat to learn more about the issues they're fighting for on your behalf. Yesterday, we heard from Illinois Congresswoman Robin Kelly of the 2nd District. Tomorrow, we'll hear from Raja Krishnamoorthy, representing the 8th District. And today, it's Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton's turn in the hot seat. I started by asking her for her reaction to the U.S. and Israel's war with Iran. Here she is.
Look at what's happened. We have a president, and all of us as Americans woke up once again to a tweet or post from the president of the United States upon committing an act of war. And that's been without any authorization from Congress. No clear plan as to what's happening or why. And this is not what anyone is asking for, to be led into another forever war. What I hear people talking about on the campaign trail every day is how expensive things are, how they want more affordable healthcare, more affordable housing and groceries. And that's what they are looking for, but they're not looking for this. And I always say that this president, and I've said it many times, is not normal. And this is not the normal way that things should be happening. And Congress does play a role, and we have a constitution, and we need him to follow it.
So tell me more about what you're thinking here. I mean, where would you draw the line? When is war necessary?
Well, as indicated, there needs to be a vote on the War Powers Act. I would not authorize this president to just on a whim go in, continue another forever war. I think it's really looking at how he does things. And I think that's the thing that is not done in the best interest of the American people. It puts us in danger, quite frankly. As I've already mentioned, we have 4 American soldiers that are dead. And what is the plan? There's no clarity on what he's doing, why he's doing it, what's the plan from here. And those are all questions that need to be answered and accounted for.
So what I'm hearing you say, I mean, is there any circumstance where an attack on another foreign power would be appropriate?
Ever? Yes, there are times that there may be, of course, when you think about the national security of the American people and what needs to happen, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a president who doesn't know why, doesn't have a plan for what should happen, and just gets up, puts a post at 2 a.m. and says, this is what I'm doing. That's not okay. And it's not in the best interest of Americans.
Moving on, I want to tell you about a WBEZ survey that we've been conducting. It's of Illinois voters, and we asked them about, what issues matter most to them. One question or one issue that came up again and again is the political polarization that's happening in this country. You've been working at the state level as lieutenant governor. Your opponents have more experience working across the aisle on Capitol Hill. So talk to us about how you would navigate this polarization in the Senate.
Sure. Well, let me go back to the fact that before becoming lieutenant governor, which I've served as the last 7 years alongside Governor J.B. Pritzker, and I'm proud of what we've been able to accomplish for all of Illinois as and being the only candidate in this race that has represented the entire state of Illinois. I started before that as a state representative, and I served in the Illinois House. I got to the House because at that time I was caring for my mother. There was an effort to strip away health care from seniors like my mother by our previous governor and my state representative. So I stepped up to run against him, and I won. I beat a 13-year incumbent because there was a need. And once again, 10 years later, I see a real need and I'm stepping up again. But what I would say is that when I got to the Illinois House, people kind of said, well, you know, you're here, you're new, just kind of sit, learn the ropes, you know, don't worry about saying too much. And I just remember thinking, that's not why I'm here. I'm here because the people elected me, and I'm here to get things done to better the lives of Illinoisans. And so I brought my experience. I'm a lawyer, but I'm also a mediator. I had for two decades an alternative dispute resolution firm. Those skills have served me well as an elected official. And I got there and got 10 bills signed into law as the chief sponsor in the House by a Republican governor. All of my bills were passed on a bipartisan basis. Most of them passed unanimously. And the way that I did that was by recognizing that it was important for me to build relationships with those on the other side of the aisle, get things done, and always remember why I was there. Now, a lot has changed in the last 10 years, and we do see that sort of hyper-polarization. But I do think that my role in the Senate will be not just to pass good legislation, it will not just be to use my bully pulpit, but it will be to get there and use those mediation skills both across the aisle, but also to continue to build unity within the Democratic Party and push us to be more courageous.
Like you said, a lot has changed. So do you think then that in the Senate you would have to take some different steps, some different actions to be able to build, you know, that bridge with folks who are completely on the other side from you?
Well, I mean, it's always going to be an opportunity to try to find. First, being clear on why I'm there. And there's a lot to fight against with the president who is, as I've always said, a wannabe dictator who, you know, is only doing what enriches himself and his wealthy friends. I'm going to stand up and fight against Donald Trump. And by the way, that's what people are looking for right now, a true fighter. And I believe that I'm best positioned to fight for the people of Illinois. But the second thing is we have to have a real vision for what we're fighting for. And we have to know how to fight for those things without compromising our values. And I think if we can be very clear on which party, who are the people, who are the leaders that are doing what's in the best interest of the American people and certainly the people of Illinois, we know sort of this is where it is. Now, I'll look for opportunities to work with anybody who will help advance, you know, that kind of work that's in the best interest of the people I represent. But what we can't do is keep compromising or just having a go along to get along mentality in the Senate or in Congress in general. It's what people are so frustrated with right now, including people within our party.
So the party, the Democratic Party, has for some years now been in the midst of an identity crisis. So in an effort to be this, you know, big tent party whose main message is essentially, we're not Trump, a lot of voters say that they don't know what the party actually stands for.
Well, we're not just a party of we're not Trump, although thank goodness we are not Trump. We're the party that's raising wages. We're the party that's creating jobs. We're the party that is expanding access to healthcare. And you know what the best example of that? It's what we've done here in Illinois. Look at what Governor Pritzker and I have been able to accomplish over these last 7 years that we've been in office. Yes, Illinois is a blue state, but we took on some really big challenges. First big bill, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We've made Illinois an island for reproductive freedom in the Midwest. You know, protecting reproductive rights, expanding access to contraception, protecting providers and patients who come to Illinois, who shouldn't have to come to Illinois to get the care they need. We've created thousands of good-paying jobs, the largest infrastructure investment. We've expanded access to healthcare, lowered the cost of prescription drugs, while also eliminating over $1 billion of medical debt. That, to me, is the Illinois blueprint that I plan to take to Washington, D.C. So, no, we're not a party that's just saying anti-Trump, that's the only message. We are talking about what we want to do. And now my message for this campaign, as for Senate, is to give the people what they want. And that's raising wages. That's making sure that we pass Medicare for all. It's getting corporate PAC money and, you know, folk out of politics and focusing on the people and not corporate special interests, and giving middle class families a tax break.
Yeah. As you mentioned, you know, a lot of what you just mentioned boils down to affordability, right? It's a big concern for Americans. The cost of housing, the cost of groceries, healthcare, so much has gone up while the wages have remained where they are. What specific steps would you take to improve just the affordability situation for Illinoisans? And give me both short-term and long-term,
sure,
if you can.
Well, you know, first of all, what's important, I also want to say, is that I come to this with my own stories. I come to this as a mom of four daughters, two of whom have said, you know, we'll see if I ever can afford to buy a home. Or another daughter who said, you know, I'm under the ACA exchange. And mom, let me tell you how my premiums went up from last year to this year. I talked about my experience as a caregiver and knowing how hard that was to be a caregiver and to work and be a mom, that sandwich generation so many talk about. So I'm not coming to this as somebody who doesn't know what it feels like to really see the affordability crisis up close and personal. So a few things that I want to see happen. When I talk about raising wages, I want to raise the minimum wage at the federal level to $25 an hour. Right now it's $7.25. No one can take care of themselves or their family on $7.25.
But how quickly could something like that happen?
Well, let's look at what we did. I mean, it took some time in Illinois to get to $15 an hour. There were people organizing that for many years, the fight for 15. We got it signed into law, first big bill that we got signed into law. But it, even in terms of implementing it, we took office, it was at $8.25, and over 4 years, we built our way because we worked with business leaders and small business owners to say, how can we do this in a way that's not, you know, such a shock to the system? So we worked together, and I will do that when I get to the Senate. But here's the thing, we should stop talking about how to give people the bare minimum. Let's give people a livable wage. That's why I'm looking at something broader than what's the least we can give people? No, let's give people enough to put a little money in their pockets, take care of their families, and have a little to save and spend in small businesses. Secondly, Medicare for all, that is a big affordability issue. The ability to decide, you know, too many people I'm meeting on the trail are deciding between paying their bills and going to the doctor in this country. It's wrong. And we need to make sure that anybody who needs to see a doctor can see one. And then, as I talked about, a tax break for the middle class, and we can pay for that by a tax increase for those making $1 million or more.
The Trump administration has used federal funding cuts as a pressure tool to try to get cities and states in line with its agenda. And it's also a form of revenge when cities and states don't get in line with its agenda. Now, we know Chicago and Illinois have been a particular target. So what's your plan to get that funding back or prevent further cuts at the federal level?
Well, I'll fight tooth and nail for the people of Illinois to get every single dollar, every resource that we are owed. I mean, this president is going after cities and states like Illinois because we dare to stand up to him. And you've seen us line up, and the people of Illinois have seen us line up together at every level of government to say, we don't want you here. You know, take your hands off the city of Chicago. Take your hands off the state of Illinois. We've seen the chaos, of course, of Operation Midway Blitz. You know, this president wants to punish those that disagree with him. I always say he's a small man. And when we push back, we win. We've taken him to court and we're winning. But we shouldn't have to spend all of this time and resources to have a president that is deciding to go against a state because we speak out against him. So we're going to keep doing everything we can to protect our people. And when I get to the Senate, I am going to not just speak out and hold him accountable and ask all of those questions. I'm not going to confirm any of his appointments or nominees to the cabinet or the Supreme Court. I am going to be a check, because that's what people are expecting from Congress. They want, this is a three co-equal branches of government, but right now we're seeing too many that are kind of just going along to get along and helping him advance his authoritarian agenda.
One more survey question for you. America's standing abroad has taken a hit, whether due to the punishing tariff policy or scaling back international aid, disrespecting foreign sovereignty, withdrawing from treaties. Are you worried about our global partners turning on us?
Yes, because we have a president right now who has made us a laughingstock on the global stage.
So what will you do to help strengthen those bonds?
Well, I mean, look at what we did in Illinois, for example, when the president once again on social media comes out and says, well, these tariffs are going to be enacted against these different countries, including our allies. You know, this is a president who wants to cozy up to strongmen. He's a wannabe dictator himself. He wants to cozy up to strongmen and then alienate our allies. And that is problematic. But what we did in Illinois is after the tariffs that impacted, for example, Mexico, Governor Pritzker and I took a delegation of business leaders, including those from the soybean industry, corn, beef, pork. We went to Mexico to say, we're going to build our own relationships. So I think it's another example of the leadership that we have demonstrated, that I have demonstrated here in Illinois. And I'm going to bring that same mindset. We cannot let Donald Trump continue unchecked. I will be a check on this president when I get to the Senate. I will speak out. I will ask the questions. I will draw attention. And I will hold him accountable. And we all need to be in that mindset because what he's doing, quite frankly, is dangerous.
And staying in that same vein, I want you to just make your final memorable pitch, right? Tell me what separates you from the others. What do you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, I'd be so honored to represent the great state of Illinois in the United States Senate and bring with me a record of getting things done for people. You know, right now, more than anything else, people are looking for someone who can get things done, who's going to fight, and is not part of the status quo that has been broken in Washington right now. So that's the kind of leadership that I will bring. As I said, I want to give the people what they want. I want to raise your wages. I want to make sure that you have access to health care. I want to get corporate PAC money out of politics and out of campaigning, and I want to make sure that you get a tax break. That's the kind of real tangible results that people are looking for. My opponent is, you know, we've closed this gap. We have the momentum. And the reason that, you know, now we're seeing these external MAGA allies of Congressman Krishnamoorthy coming at me with $7 million ad buy in these final weeks is because he knows that I have the momentum and he's panicking. I'm going to keep my head down and keep for the next 2 weeks working hard to earn the endorsement and support of every single Illinoisan. And see you at the finish line.
That's Lieutenant Governor of Illinois, Juliana Stratton, running for Senate to replace outgoing veteran Senator Dick Durbin. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, now for a quick update on the biggest stories in our area. At the table to help me break them down was Claire Lane, WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor, and Mitchell Armantrout, the politics reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. I had to start by asking them about this weather whiplash we've been getting here in Chicago. Here's Claire.
It's a little spooky this morning. We'll call it the fog leading up to the storm.
But I was driving north on Lakeshore this morning. This is around 6:30, and it was fine. Until I got to Navy Pier and there was this just like, you know, rainbow of fog, if you will. And I was confused.
That's the ghost of Navy Pier.
Oh.
But actually, it's the air temperature changing and it's changing quickly. It's going to be dropping throughout most of the day as sort of a prequel to some heavy rain, some thunderstorms, which are arriving later this afternoon into this evening. And they could be pretty severe.
Yeah. Did you see the fog?
Mitch? I did, yeah. Coming in on the Orange Line, it's this really scenic, like kind
you
of
have
like
the best
Gotham
view.
Vibes. Yeah, when you come in, it was beautiful, you know, kind of elsewhere, very idyllic spring morning.
Right.
And then, very gothic, very quick.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to complain about, you know, the weather we had yesterday leading into today. So mild. You know, I was out in a t-shirt, you know, taking out the trash. But now things have kind of cooled off.
Well, yesterday, you should know, we did actually break the record for warmest March 9th.
Did we?
Yes. Sun Times reporting this morning that the official temperature yesterday at O'Hare, which is often the benchmark that we use, was 73 degrees. So the previous record was set back in 2014 at 69 degrees. So I think that it's fair to assume that the globe is warming, Mitch.
Well, this is why I referenced whiplash earlier, because what is this I'm hearing about possible snow, Claire?
Yeah, so we've got the mixed bag that is sort of pseudo spring in Chicago. Beautiful weather. Now we're going to have fog, some very heavy rain. Snow is possible overnight Wednesday leading up to Thursday. We could be back in the 20s. By Monday.
Oh, goodness. Chicago, get it together.
It's a five-coat situation. This is where the coat hanger...
I knew I shouldn't have put away my big coat.
Get it back out.
All right, speaking of what the spring season brings, Mitch, I'm looking at you because we've been expecting a return of ICE and Border Patrol this month, actually. What is the latest? Are they coming? No?
All indications are that, there's not really any imminent invasion or massive influx of federal agents like we saw last summer and fall. But the Sun-Times reported then that, the feds were expected to come back in full force right around this month.
That's right.
But really, obviously, a lot has changed in the last couple months based on what happened in Minnesota.
Yeah, remind us.
Obviously, the federal agents who shot Renee Good, Alex Preddy, obviously created a lot of unrest in Minneapolis, basically forced the president's hand to pull the plug on that operation. So there's really not any indication that the feds are ramping up their presence. They've never actually fully left. Like, we get reports every day of folks seeing agents deporting people, different parts of the city, different parts of the area, just not seeing the huge numbers. There were reports that, we could see upwards of 1,000 federal agents coming into the city.
So far, no indication of that massive comeback.
Not yet, but with the caveat that who knows what happens next week, let alone this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Things change really
quick.
And
not to mention that the funding for the Department of Homeland Security currently in flux, and they're without, their previous leader, Kristi Noem, so there's an interim department head right now. So there's still just a lot, I think, of shaky ground.
They've got a lot of things to sort out in the back end. Claire, the clock is ticking. We've got, 1 week, exactly 1 week until primary day, and Illinois Democrats, they're worried about mail-in ballots. What's going on?
That's correct. So Illinois Democrats are urging voters who usually or often vote by mail for whatever reason to send their ballots in by 5 o'clock today. Recent postal changes are at risk, right? Because ballots could not be counted with some... something the Trump administration did, which means that the ballot cannot be postmarked on the same day that they are received by the U.S. Postal Service.
Oh, okay.
So that's the caveat.
So then you're at risk of it not being postmarked before March 17th.
Yeah, and that means it could be rejected entirely if that's the case. So, if you want to make sure that your ballot is counted, today is what Democrats, anyway, are saying. To get it in.
5 p.m.
5 p.m.
Wow.
That's right.
Mitch, let's talk about the Obama Presidential Center. A lot of buzz lately because we have an opening date.
Finally have an opening date. Now, this is actually one of the first stories I covered when I started at the Sun-Times. The former president, Kenwood's finest, Barack Obama, announced plans for his presidential center back in 2015.
Jeez, I was going to say over a decade ago.
Right, a long time. There's been a lot of lawsuits, a lot of federal reviews, a lot of community pushback, frankly, against this project going up on Stony Island near Midway Plaisance. Juneteenth, that's the big weekend when the Obama Foundation is going to be rolling out. It's basically going to be a big party. There's going to be concerts, there's going to be speakers, family activities. It's a big campus. It's like 20 acres. If you've been down around Hyde Park, you've seen the building.
Oh, yeah. You can't miss it.
A 220-foot tower that they've been working on for a couple years now.
Very strange-looking tower that'll make you kind of say, wow,
it's striking.
What is that?
Yeah, kind of like an obelisk, and it has like
words now at the top, an inscription of a past speech of his.
Right, and it's a big, there's a lot of parkland around it, obviously eating up some of the Jackson Park parkland to the chagrin of certain environmental and neighborhood groups. But yeah, this will be basically the city's first chance, the world's first chance to get a full look at what's on the table.
Yeah, there's even some excitement. I have had folks reach out, you know, that who don't live here and saying, hey, when that building opens, you better go down and you better go check it out. I'm like, yeah, I will. But, you know, museums, they're amazing. Chicago has quite a few of them, but they can be pricey. So what does the cost of access to the Obama Center actually look like?
So they haven't released the prices yet for entering the museum. But the foundation is quick to stress that, you know, basically most of that area, it's free for the public to come in, check it out, walk around.
Nice.
So there's sort of like outdoor art installations, just kind of place to hang out. But yeah, going inside the actual museum is going to cost you. They say it's basically going to be roughly in line with, you know, the field museums, the shed aquariums of the world, which, as we know, is not terribly cheap. You know, some of those tickets can be 25, 30 bucks or more, depending on exhibitions. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you will have to pony up a little bit to get the full experience.
Maybe it'll cost extra to see the Barack Obama hologram.
Gosh. Claire, while you're in the hot seat there's some sad news for fans of the show Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yes, a very familiar voice here on WBEZ. Longtime Chicago newsman. This is Bill Curtis. He says he's retiring from the weekly hour-long news quiz program. We know it as Wait, Don't Tell Me. Some of us just call it Wait, but he's 85.
Yeah.
And he's essentially just saying the time is now for him to start living like it.
His voice is so synonymous with that show. Let's listen.
Sink your teeth into me, North Carolina. I'm your hot and saucy Bill McHugh. Spread my smooth, buttery voice on that baguette. I'm the voice so powerful, I command the clocks to spring forward.
Now, Bill, this is a morning show. So his last day as Wait's judge and scorekeeper is May 23rd. He'll still pop in as a fill-in, though, right?
Yeah, he said he's going to continue to contribute to the show on a more limited basis. And, of course, I mean, we've got the archives to last and last and last. So maybe they'll invent a Bill Curtis button.
Yeah, that's a great idea. What else are you watching?
Well, we have from Bill Curtis to literal dinosaurs, they're on their way to the Brookfield Zoo.
You and your transitions, Claire.
Is going to play host to 35 life-size dinos on May 22nd. So as part of this new exhibit, visitors can climb on some of these giant fossils, which is kind of cool, dig for bones and explore a rib cage tunnel. Very interactive at the zoo.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Dinosaur lover, Mitch?
You better believe it.
I knew it. I've
got all my Moldoramas from Brookfield Zoo. Can't wait to collect some more.
Those are probably up to 10 bucks now for the Moldorama.
It's tough. It's tough times.
Mitch, the White Sox, opening day is coming up in a few weeks. Excitement, yes. Are we going to have a good team this year?
There's a lot of excitement for the White Sox. You know, it's been a tough few years. 100 losses the last 3 years each. So that's more than 300 losses
right,
for those keeping score at home. But yeah, there is some excitement. There's a lot of new pieces.
New starting pitcher?
It's his second year. He's a young guy, Shane Smith,
okay,
who I think is going to become more of a household name in the city this year. But the Sox named him their opening day starter over the weekend. You know, he's 26. He's a power thrower. He's a Boston guy. I think that's something that a lot of fans have already certainly identifying with that chip on his shoulder. Sox are expecting big things from him. He was an all-star last year in his first season. He was a Rule 5 draft pick, which...
What does that mean?
Basically, that means when baseball teams all set their rosters, if there's any guys that don't quite fit on their roster and another team likes that guy,
yeah,
they can go ahead and scoop him up.
I see.
And put him on their roster, which is what the Sox did with Shane Smith
last year.
And a diamond in the rough
for
the White Sox.
Sounds like a big deal. All right, we'll leave it there. Mitch Armantrout with the Chicago Sun-Times and WBEZ's Claire Lane.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Maha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.